I've just been informed by a reliable source that this is heaven, and we've all made it. Live from the KJLL studios, here is your host, Jake Feinberg.
From the Ben Franklin Bridge to El Cajon, California, from Kyoto to Formosa, and from Mecca to Hyman Roth, Savannah, this is the Jake Feinberg Show, alongside my board woman, Betty Cantor Jackson. I am Jake Feinberg, and we got snow on the mountains here in Mount Lemmon. It's unseasonably cold here. A lot of snow and a lot to get to here on the Jake Feinberg Show. Bottom of the hour, Joey Rogers and Celeste Lupu from Dancing in the Streets, Arizona, will be my guests to talk about their upcoming benefit at St. Augustine's Church. But just a ton to get to today. And I just real quick, I wanted to focus on something that came across the wire over the weekend. I believe this was reported by the Arizona Republic yesterday evening. Scott Bumgard, the majority leader of the Arizona State Senate, was briefly taken into custody on suspicion of domestic violence on Friday. But he was released because he was immune to arrest under rules of the Arizona State Constitution. The way the story goes is that his girlfriend of 7 months, a woman named Aubrey Ballard, claims that he was dancing inappropriately with somebody at a fundraiser on Friday evening. And at about 11:20 p.m., she took exception to that, started throwing his clothes out the window. He, in turn, went back to retrieve the clothes. And when he did that, she said, "I'm taking your car, buddy." Well, after that, he dragged her out of the car. She sustained some scrapes and bruises. He, from the result of that altercation, received a black eye and a busted lip. You know, and I was really ready to throw this guy into the meat grinder, although Rose cautioned me, and this is the problem with our media in many ways, guilty until proven innocent. And the truth is that we need to keep in mind that the facts of this case are not all out on the table. But I'm calling on all media outlets from Southern Arizona all the way up to Phoenix, all the way up to Flagstaff, to absolutely put pressure on the prosecutor's office when they're reviewing this case. Ultimately, the decision is going to fall based on the decision is going to be made based on the statements made by Aubrey Ballard, who was clearly dazed and confused from this issue. But Scott Bumgard, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, also needs to be held accountable for his actions as a public official in this state. Please keep yourselves tuned. His last name is Bundgaard. That being said, I spent some time, went down this week to Raul Grijalva's office, and my plan was to actually talk to him about immigration. It's one of the threads of my show that I want to begin a dialogue, a legitimate dialogue on immigration reform. And I believe that in many ways, if it's going to start anywhere, it's going to start here in Tucson. When I got to his office, I was informed by his press secretary that, in fact, he was about to hold a press conference related to the GOP House budget that passed in the middle of the night, like a thief in the night. They passed a budget that would slash effectively $60 billion from low-income families. Things like WIC, Women, Infant, and Children. They provide low-income mothers with milk and different types of staples. NPR and PBS would be cut. Planned Parenthood would be cut from this proposed budget. The National Endowment for the Arts would be cut. Direct abortion services would be cut. And what I wanted to focus on first was the idea that this is really an ideological document more than it is a fiscal document. This is not about solving our budget issues. We have a $1 trillion deficit that we have been putting on a credit card for years. Now, all of a sudden, people are all concerned about the deficit. I have news for you. Nobody cares. The deficit means nothing. China will bankroll us until the end of time. If they decided that they wanted to cut off funding, their economy would fall off a cliff as well. This is a false argument. But what this budget document does hold is an ideological point of view from the right wing, radical right wing of the Republican Party that says, you know what? We see an opportunity here. We see a vulnerable public. We see people that feel helpless. And we see people that are afraid. So let's make them even more afraid and cut off even more services. And there was not one thing about really the cause and effect, the idea of how we got to this point. Nobody seemed to really care about our deficit 9 years ago. Nobody cared when we were putting the Afghanistan and the Iraq wars on the credit card. Nobody cared when we were doing Medicare prescription drug reform in the middle part of the 2000s. Only now has it become a wedge issue and a way for the Republicans to say, hey, we can absolutely take the public here by surprise and get rid of all these programs without acknowledging how we got to this part in the first place. And I thought that during his press conference, he was eloquent when he made this point about cause and effect.
We never talked about cause and effect in this process. We're in this deficit because of very bad, very short-sighted, very special interest-oriented fiscal policies of the last 9 years to the point that we have this deficit. At one point, it was a surplus nine years ago. At one point, the debt was beginning to come down. It has continued to increase. And there are root causes for that. And I think as any part of any fiscal reform or budget reform, the cause of has to be part of the equation. And we never dealt with it. So this budget that the Republicans passed, there was not one single Democrat that voted for it, I'm proud to say, that passed in the dawn of Saturday, effectively cuts 800,000 to 1 million public and private jobs. It cuts job training by $3 billion. It eliminates 200,000 opportunities for jobs through the Workforce Investment Act. It cuts effectively up to 1,400 cops off the beat because it eliminates the COPS program that has been very important to communities like Tucson, Pima County, Yuma, areas that I represent. And it takes 2,500 firefighters off the job by eliminating the grants that retain many of them in their jobs. It cuts the WIC program by $750 million. And you see the list before you. It eliminates Title IX, which I always thought was kind of something that was almost sacrosanct. This is about provides HIV testing and screening. It provides blood pressure testing, contraceptive services to more than 5 million low-income women, two-thirds of which are uninsured. That was a program that since its inception has been a vital intervention in the prevention strategy of any community to deal with the health issues that they face. Cut substance abuse money, and within months, 127 health centers that have opened it with last year's stimulus money are going to have to pare down or begin to close their services. That is going to translate to 11 million people in this nation that will not have access to a community health center. It cut Head Start by $1 billion, and to Arizona, that's about 3,500 kids that will not have the opportunity to experience and have the benefit of a Head Start program. We destroyed the opportunity to create almost 300,000 private sector transportation and infrastructure jobs by the cuts that we made there. $2.5 billion for high-speed rail projects that have already been awarded. It rescinds those. And even as much as these majority likes to pound its chest about enforcement and the border, it effectively begins to cut particularly ports of entry, which are vital to the commerce and to the security of this nation. Those were cut by 66% in some areas.
So this is where we're at. We got here by charging things ad nauseum, and now we're looking at the elimination of huge public and private sector jobs. And the only thing I can say is this. If you're unemployed, if you're a cop or a firefighter, if you're somebody who accesses WIC, Women, Infant, and Children, if you are somebody who, through a Title IX, gets blood pressure testing and other types of basic medical services, if you use these beautiful health centers that our community has, if you are a grandparent or a parent of a child in Head Start, then contact your local congressman and get involved. These are the programs that are going to be wiped away. Period. These are the values and the priorities of this radical right-wing Republican Party. Another clip that he talked about was the ideological tendencies of this budget. It's not fiscally sound. It'll do nothing to help us compete with India and China. It'll do nothing to create jobs. It'll do nothing to get us out of these foreign wars. It is an ideological document with more shredding of the fine arts.
Let's just talk a little bit about some of the ideological cuts. National Endowment for the Arts, huge cuts. Huge cuts. Planned Parenthood, almost the elimination of them being able to access any federal money. And under the Hyde Amendment, they are already, if that is the issue, already prevented from providing direct abortion services. So the issues about screening, information, prevention for women is effectively eliminated from any government support. NPR and PBS, probably clipping any independent access that people have to information in this country. Any unbiased, balanced opportunity to get some reaction, and historically been supported with public funds as part of information that the American people need. Legal corporation services, legal aid to poor people. These I all consider ideological cuts. Museums and libraries, 60-70% cuts in this budget from support from the federal government. What my colleagues said is that this is such a huge fiscal crisis that we have to do this in order to make the country solvent and to assure that the next generation of young people and children don't end up with this national debt. I agree. It is a crisis. But it is a crisis of proportions that can be handled and it can be pragmatically dealt with.
It depresses me when the National Endowment for the Arts, Planned Parenthood, NPR and PBS are being slashed. In order to get me back on the right track, I need a little bit of zany Bob Weir. Okay, that recentered me a little bit. So the reality is this. I had an opportunity to ask Representative Grijalva a couple of questions, and the first one I asked him was, essentially, if you have no bipartisan support for this stuff, if the House is in fact that divided, how, in essence, are we ever going to be able to form coalitions in order to have pragmatic solutions to problems? And this was his response.
You know, this is why this discussion is going on. And this is why this discussion is going to be replicated all across the country and all across my districts at a lot of meetings. Is that I think once the American people begin to understand how it's going to hit them and their families, then I think the pressure mounts. The greatest ingredient in public decision making is public opinion. And with this is as much a public opinion discussion and fight as it is one between two parties. You know, the midterms happened. And as John Boehner likes to say, elections have consequences. He also said, if we lose a million jobs, so be it, which is an interesting philosophy to carry. But they do have consequences. But I don't think the American people that went to the polls angry at the fact there was no definition about what was going to happen to the economy, angry about they didn't understand what health care reform meant to them, angry that their kid might not have the same opportunities to move forward or better opportunities than them. They were angry. And they were angry at the people in charge, and we were in charge. And we paid a price for that anger. But I don't think the American people bought that anger on themselves. And once they see what the consequence is to them, then you're going to get buyer's remorse. Then you're going to get people saying, no, I didn't vote for this. And we think that, and the polls are starting to show a shift away. You know, it's the complexity of how American people think. They want the deficit dealt with, but don't touch Social Security. They want the deficit dealt with, but I want more money for education. I want the deficit dealt with, and I want to make sure that my Medicare costs never go up. I want the deficit dealt with, but I want to make sure that those things that support my family are in place. College education, good schools, health care for babies. And so this kind of split personality issue is part of the whole debate. And that's where you elect people to Congress, so that not to interpret what the American people are thinking, but to try to reach some consensus to try to satisfy those two kind of contradictory thoughts that are going on among the American people. And I say a pragmatic plan to deal with the deficit over 10 to 12 years is something the American people will say, okay, there's a plan in place. And in the interim, we're not going to devastate everything along the road.
I think it's really important to talk about the devastation again. Just to reiterate, you have job training programs that would be cut, over 800,000 public and private sector jobs, 1,400 COP programs, Title IX and WIC programs, over $750 million in that, Head Start as well. We're talking about elimination of programs for people that are feeling hopeless right now, that don't feel like they can gravitate to the next level. They used to be able to in our country back in the 50s and the 60s when the cost of living was lower and they could make a nice middle class lifestyle for their family. But now, that hope is all but gone. And if it is up to the House GOP leadership, bill already passed the House. If you were a public sector worker, if you're a firefighter, if you're a policeman, if you're a teacher, if you're a librarian, if you are somebody who depends on WIC and Planned Parenthood and Title IX and Head Start, then get involved. Otherwise, don't cry about it when these programs are gone, because they're going to get cut. They're going to get cut right out of here. It's not the scalpel approach. It's the meat cleaver approach. I also asked Raul Grijalva, as it relates to local Tucson, you're beginning to see when you drive around a lot of these nice sort of El Rio community health centers being put up. Aesthetically very pretty. Serving people of low income. Giving people a chance to get the medical services that they need, and the children getting the medical services that they need. And I asked him, what would be the impact on those health centers if this budget by the House went through?
Let's just look at what that would mean, health centers in Arizona. That would be about $5 million in funding that's lost to health centers immediately. About 70,000 patients off the rolls that would not receive the care. And this cut then raises the Medicaid program cost by billions of dollars that is going to have to be passed on to patients. So that's an additional drop in accessibility. And health centers are this huge safety net for uninsured, pay-as-you-go, sliding fee. And they're closing their doors, or partially closing their door, is going to have a corresponding increase at UMC, TMC, St. Mary's, Northwest, where people are going to come in a very acute health conditions in the emergency room, and you're going to have to take care of them. And that cost is uncompensated, and it won't be compensated. So you're kind of biting your own hand here, because by closing the health centers, you're merely you're creating a whole new other deficit and liability somewhere else. And it's going to happen. They've been all the projections that the Republicans had about the health center closures. This is what's going to do. American Hospital Association said this is what it's going to do to us. And Medicaid said we're going to have to raise costs, billions of dollars, in order to be able to make up for the losses. So, and those are pass-on costs to somebody else. Or reduce the payments that you make to docs, and they're not going to like that. So there's a corresponding hit that's going to happen. And the pressure on local people here in Tucson, providers of health care, human services, substance abuse, educational institution, the pressure of them to do more and more for an increasing population without any support coming in is going to be very difficult. And it is a very real pressure that my friends in Pima County and the city and the school district is going to be feeling within 8 to 9 months, because this just is going to increase. And then we have a legislature and a governor that basically has the same mentality as the Republican majority in Congress, that we're going to cut our way out of this by cutting taxes and then eliminating programs. You can't do both. That chicken's going to come home to roost, and as well as some of the cuts that are being proposed, you know, at the national level. So this economic issue is a huge issue. It needs compromise and consensus, but you can't compromise from a position of weakness where you're just saying, okay, whatever you want to do. That's not how you compromise. And there is a meeting in some common ground. I hope it starts at the Senate. We're more than willing to participate. We know we have to swallow some bitter pills, but, you know, this is the whole pharmacy we're talking about here.
The whole pharmacy. It's a drugstore cowboy House of Representatives, and they are willing to strip down every single thing that relates to human awareness, human growth, and human evolution. They don't believe in it, they don't support it, and they want to take it down. And it's going to do nothing for our long-term fiscal health as a country. That's the reality. The problem is, Grijalva is fighting an uphill battle. And like I said before, if you are somebody who's been unemployed for a long time, if you're somebody who is a cop or a teacher or a firefighter or a librarian, if you're somebody who accesses WIC, Women and Infant and Children, if you're somebody who accesses these El Rio health centers or does Head Start, anybody who relies on public funding, get out there and get involved. Otherwise, these programs are going to go right away. And you'll have nobody to, you have to look in the mirror every morning to see that kind of stuff. At the end of the day, we are on our way to becoming a rationed country very, very quickly. If we have any guts left, we're going to stand up. When we come back, Joey Rogers dancing in the streets. We'll be back.
Tucson Jolt.
Having heard from all of you, it seems only fair, doesn't it, that you should now hear from all of me.
KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Shelby Lynn. Authorities in Madison, Wisconsin want hundreds of protesters to leave the Capitol building after almost 2 weeks of demonstrations there. But this man says he'll risk arrest rather than leave.
It's not a matter of leaving and coming back. It's just a matter of free speech and standing up for workers' rights. And it's just another order from the governor that the people of Wisconsin are simply not going to listen to.
State workers have been protesting the governor's controversial budget bill. The head of the Senate Budget Committee, Kent Conrad, says he thinks Congress will reach a deal on a short-term budget before Friday's deadline. The UN estimates as many as 100,000 people have fled the violence in Libya, but thousands more are still trying to get out as longtime ruler Muammar Gaddafi tries to hold on to power. It's Hollywood's big night. The stars are gathering right now at the Kodak Theater in L.A. for tonight's Academy Awards ceremony. The most trusted name in news, this is CNN Radio.
Hey, Kelly. So, who'd you hire to do your emails?
What? You know it's just me here.
Come on, I got your newsletter. Pretty fancy. Photos, coupons. Come on, who is it?
Oh, no one, silly. I use Constant Contact.
Really?
With ConstantContact.com, it's so easy. They make me look like $1 million, and the emails really work.
Oh, yeah?
It got you in here today, didn't it?
Touché.
ConstantContact.com. Plans as low as $15 a month with a free 60-day trial.
Thank you, America. For over 70 years, GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance, and because of you, they've been the nation's fastest-growing car insurance company over the past 5 years. To show our appreciation, call within the next 15 minutes and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. This is not a limited-time offer, and okay, actually you could call whenever you like. But why are we even arguing about this, America?
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.
This is a message for all men dealing with frequent urination, or waking at night to urinate. Right now, New Vitality is inviting you to take part in a nationwide giveaway of their best-selling supplement, Beta Prostate. You heard right. Every man who calls right now will learn how to try our best-selling supplement, Beta Prostate, for free. You only pay a small shipping and handling fee. For details, just call 1-800-790-6281. Supplies are very limited, so don't wait. Beta Prostate is made with a breakthrough ingredient shown to support a healthy urine flow and bladder emptying. It even reduces waking at night from the urge to urinate. Take part in this special opportunity and try Beta Prostate free. But hurry, this free offer will only be around for a limited time. And when this offer is gone, it's gone. Just call 1-800-790-6281. That's 1-800-790-6281. Call 1-800-790-6281.
When Coffee Times first opened, many wondered how this standalone coffee hut could survive among the beasts of Java lore. Ah, but some 10 years later, the answer is a resounding yes. Located at 3401 East Speedway Boulevard, Coffee Times specializes in many different drinks, from mocha fraps to lattes to my personal favorite, the Ice Power Coffee. The best part about Coffee Times is their convenient two-way drive-through, lunch menu, and supreme service. Not to mention their weekly special. The next time you're in the area, head over to Coffee Times on Speedway between Alberton and Country Club. It will definitely kickstart your day.
Folks, this is Jake Feinberg. One of the first things I wanted to do when I moved to Tucson was find authentic Chinese cuisine. After a tip from the Chinese Student Association, I headed over to Badar Chinese Restaurant. Well, it's been 7 years, and I have never looked back. Located at 7321 East Broadway Boulevard, Badar has been a family-run operation since 1992. The award-winning chef produces succulent dishes from sizzling ginger chicken to salt and pepper shrimp. The thing that separates Badar from the rest is that the chef procures ancient oriental dishes with the exotic island flair of Taiwan. Most importantly, there are no gimmicks or razzle-dazzle at Badar. You won't find any flat-screen TVs or karaoke machines. Badar is a place to go enjoy good food and spend time with your family. It exudes peace and tranquility after a long week of work. So come down and check out Badar Chinese Restaurant. Hong Hao Chu. It's that good.
If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Be a part of a new coalition with Jake Feinberg. The second half of his show starts right now.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Jake Feinberg Show. Phone number 529-3508 if you want to be part of the program. And a while ago, it's going on at least two years now, my daughter, a very theatrical little girl, and we wanted to get her into a dance program, and we found one, a dance into the streets, and I walked in, and I heard this loud, audacious, wild-sounding voice, and I said, what is that exactly? I said, this is, and even Hanny at first was kind of like, my daughter was like, I don't really know what this is all about, and I walk in, and who is it but Joey Rogers, who is who's a dance teacher for young children. And ever since that time, the most captivating dance teacher in Tucson by far. It makes my Saturday every time I take my daughter down there. And I'm joined by Joey Rogers and his wife, Celeste Lupu, founder and artistic director of Dancing in the Streets, located at West 38th Street, Suite 200, 88 West 38th Street, Suite 200. Guys, welcome to the Jake Feinberg Program.
Oh, hello.
Thanks for having us. We're delighted to be here.
We're very delighted.
And I mean it very seriously. This is one of the goals of my show really is to, as much as it's a tough time for people out there now, but my part of my show is to try to articulate and to introduce people to the good stuff that's going on.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that there's anything better than physical activity for young kids. And you can do that in many different modalities. But I have a girl, and she loves to dance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And to have a male ballet teacher is special. And I love when I come in there because, you know, you'll give me a high five.
Right,
but
absolutely.
But the truth is that your mind is focused on, I mean, you're in the zone. You want to be with those kids.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, Joey, you were born and raised in South Tucson. Talk a little bit about your upbringing, how you got involved with dancing, and where you went from there.
Oh, well, I was born and raised in South Park, Arizona, Tucson. And my mother was a housekeeper for a wealthy real estate lawyer. And that the lawyer had two daughters. And I guess my mom used to take them to dance class, and I used to just tag along. So I guess one day I tagged along and I was kind of watching, and the teacher says that you need to put that boy, or came up to my mother and said, you need to put that boy in ballet. And she kind of like, yeah, well, yeah, whatever, you know. Yeah, that's nice of
that's
you.
That's going to happen, yeah.
Yeah. But no, not my son. So what happened was is at that time I was going to a school, a Catholic school called St. Ambrose, which is off on Tucson Boulevard. And they were having auditions for ballet. So my mom got a bright idea to put me in tights and a leotard and force me in to go take this ballet class, which is the teacher that I met, Maria Morton, who took me under her wing. As soon as she saw me walk through the door, she went to my mom and said, I want to give him a full scholarship. And that's how it started, pretty much.
Just before we continue, I wanted to, Dancing in the Streets is holding a night of meatballs and music. It's a spaghetti dinner prepared by Salvatore Gentile at St. Augustine Cathedral, which is the 192 South Stone Avenue. It's on Saturday, March 5th from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. It's a fundraiser for this beautiful organization. If you call in now, 529-3508, I have two free tickets to give away to this wonderful fundraiser for this fantastic enterprise. And what I wanted to talk to you about, Joey, a little bit is Maria Morton is the idea that when you pursue a dream, especially an artistic dream, you need to have help along the way. You know, you need people to notice you, and you need people to take you under your wing.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, explain how important it was to have a mentor at that time in your life.
Oh, geez. She was such a big mentor. She just kind of took me under her wing, and she molded me and shaped me as the dancer and director as I am today.
She was like a surrogate mother for him.
Yeah, she's like, yeah.
And Celeste, you were involved with her. You danced under the direction of her as well.
Yeah.
That's actually how Joey and I met, was we met in ballet school at Marie Morton's school, because I grew up on the east side, and I went to Saguaro, he went to South Point, so we probably wouldn't have met had it not been for Maria Morton. Mm. George Zorich was another huge supporter and influence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He used to drive Joey up to Phoenix to these exams to pass to the next grade. The training that we had, Royal Academy, you don't just automatically get promoted. There's a big examination you have to take. And George Zorich would drive him to Phoenix and pay the fee for him to be able to take these examinations.
We have a phone call on the line, so take it away.
Well, hi there. I'm your first caller for the tickets to the fundraiser.
That's wonderful.
And this is Lana Rich calling you.
Well, it's great to have you, Lana. You have just qualified to win two free tickets to a spaghetti dinner at St. Augustine Cathedral to promote Dancing in the Streets. And I couldn't be happier to be giving them away to a beautiful woman like yourself. So I really appreciate you being a loyal listener to the Jake Feinberg Show. Please keep up the good work and keep telling people about the show. I really do appreciate it.
Okay, we sure will.
Okay.
All right.
That's as easy as it gets right there.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and I'll tell you, that's what I was trying to explain before is, well, I don't want to get sidetracked in politics right now. Celeste, you met Joey, and what was it like? Did you see him dancing and you're like, wow, he's a mover? Well, I mean, how did that work?
Well, yeah, kind of was actually like that. There was a Maria Morton started with a company called Tucson Civic Ballet and Tucson Mountain Ballet, and they were actually in the space where the opera company is now. And first time I saw Joey, it was like instant. I knew I was going to marry him, even though I was like 13. But we didn't start dating for a while after that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, did you feel the same? I mean, was
no, it? I didn't feel so well. Oh, no. See, my whole thing about ballet is because, you know, during that time, I was 13, 14, and girls start coming into play. And I started noticing
right.
how many girls versus how many boys in ballet. And I like those odds that I was looking at. So, even though I got teased in high school, you know, but, you know, I knew something, that I had something golden or, you know, I knew that I had something different than most kids never had, you know. So
I think it's one of the things that also, especially for, it's much less, there's no stigma for girls. I mean, Hanny could go and do ballet all the way. Mm-hmm. You know, it's accepted. But as a male, how did you deal with some of that peer pressure? Because I'm sure that, was it an inner drive, a self-confidence? What were some of the good comeback lines that you would say to,
some of the good comeback lines like, yeah, you play football, that's fine. Well, you go play with the other boys while I'm going to lift the girls.
Yeah.
You know, most jocks do not like that. They swell up and like, what are you talking about?
Hey. Question the masculinity, you know?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good one.
Right, pretty much. But, I just, you know, in those days, I just kept to my own. You know, I was kind of awkward. I was an awkward little black kid. So, and then in those days, too, a lot of people didn't recognize dance, you know? So,
Especially ballets.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, getting to that point, in Tucson, you talk a lot about how the community has changed a lot. What was the dance scene like professionally when you guys were growing up in high school? You know, and how has it changed?
I think it was actually richer. I felt like there was a little
bit more support for
ballet specifically. I mean, it was a different generation, too. We had, Mikhail Baryshnikov, and we had big names that were being drawn to ballet. It wasn't like it is now. There's almost an anti-backlash against anything that's classical.
Because you come across as elitist or something, which is a joke,
right,
you know?
Right.
Which is the farthest thing from it. It's just it's a beautiful art form.
Right.
Go ahead, though. Continue. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of why we have Dancing in the Streets Arizona, is to sort of offer that same level of training and classical introduction to performing arts without any of the traditional stigmas attached to it. I mean, we have so many people that walk in the door and the first thing that comes out of the mouth is, I always wanted to be a dancer, but my mother put me in folklorico. That's all we had. Or my daughter wants to dance, but she's too short, too fat, too old, too young, too this. And, you know, you always ask them, well, who told you that? Where's the book that says you have to be this?
Right. And see, what we're trying to do on that side of town, too, we're trying to educate. We're trying to educate that ballet is the first dance, is the first foundation of dance. You know, it's like, you know, I love hip hop. Hip hop dancing is great. But, you know, a lot of these hip hop dancers could be a whole lot better if they took ballet, you know. So, I mean, that's the whole thing. You know, you can't do hip hop and do ballet, but you can do ballet. You can do hip hop. You can do ballet. You could do jazz. Anything with ballet related, you can do other dances, and it will help you. You know.
Don't get me wrong here, though, Celeste Lupu and Joey Rogers. They were deep into the funk and R&B scene in the 70s. You know, you guys. Joey's told me before, going to see Tower of Power and War at the TCC. You guys went to the Surly Wench quite a bit to boogie down a little bit.
Right.
How has the music scene changed as well. You used to get the big acts in here. People don't come down to Tucson anymore.
Well, you know what? Back in those days, that's the thing about my mother. She put me in ballet, and then here was another thing that my mom used to do. She was really big into music. So any acts that came into town, she used to give me money, and she said, "You go down there and you go see who it is." Like I was talking to you. That was my first concert, Tower of Power and War.
I'm jealous.
You know, and then it got to, you know, better, and I saw James Brown, then, you know, Elton John back in the day, and Cheap Trick, and, you know, so on and so on. So,
Well, one of the things we had was festival seating. We don't have festival seating anymore. Festival seating was sort of, I'm glad we don't have festival seating anymore. Mm. It was pretty dangerous.
Right.
The other thing is, I think the musical environment was a little bit more open. Tucson was sort of just a really diverse community of all kinds of things, and it was really open. It's gotten a lot more conservative over the years, and sort of there's an acceptable form of art that you can go from here to A to B, but if you go outside of B or A, then it's not quite as accepted to try.
I think it's more of we're living in a very judgmental time as well.
Oh, absolutely.
But I did want to follow up, because you guys are a multi-ethnic couple.
Mm-hmm.
And my family is as well.
Yeah.
I walk into Dancing in the Streets, located at 88 West 38th Street, South Tucson, and you get a wide array of people, you know, Irish Catholic, Jewish, you have blacks, you have Hispanics. And I talk about that must make you, at the end of the day, to have that, that's the biggest strength. I mean, politically, we might be conservative.
Right.
But Tucson still remains an ethnically diverse place. And I still believe that is the biggest strength that we have.
Oh, yeah. My mom always, she distilled in me to always be colorblind. Never look at anybody of their color or their disability. If they're crippled, crazy, or blind, you get over there, Joey, and you talk to them like a real person. And I guess that's why I've been doing all my life. I treat everybody the same. I'll give everybody the same gratitude. I want everybody to do ballet, I want to educate and, just give the people of South Tucson. Well, I hate to say that, because when I first started dancing in the streets, it was just for the city of South Tucson. But as time has gone on, I'm seeing that there's people are coming from Oro Valley, Vail, and, Marana. So I'm like thinking to myself, wow, this is a lot bigger than I really thought than it really was. So,
well, I think it was South Tucson was targeted. It wasn't exclusive for South Tucson, but that you grew up on Park and 31st and really wanted to give back to that population. But
that area,
one of the things that is nice, as you said, is really building on this diverse ballet community, which is really what we have. We wanted more than a ballet school. We have a ballet community. We want our families to interact, haves, have-nots, upper income, lower income, whatever your color is.
Right.
I can't even begin to tell people what the ethnicities of our families are. They're so diverse.
They're so diverse. We don't even know ourselves.
But the problem, the thing with our society, the thing that I think we're dealing with as a country is this idea that the door's already closed. We are a multi-ethnic country.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a huge part of the political spectrum that has a lot of money that refuses to want to really accept that. And it's because you look, your dance studio is a cross-section of what our society is becoming.
Right.
I will say this. I get in there. My daughter is just, fired up, and, she's got a lot of energy. And I think those kids collectively, it's hard to match the energy level of most 5-year-olds or 5-6-year-olds. Somehow Joey Rogers tops them all. So my question for you is, what the heck are you drinking in the morning, or how do you get up? Because you are on fire,
right?
From minute one you get in there, and like I said, I can shake your hand,
but
you're like, "Yeah, what's going on, man?" But it's like you look right through me, and you are on your way to.
That's right, because I got to focus on your daughter, but there, Jay.
What exactly?
It's a gift.
Is that a natural stimulant? I mean, where did that come from?
Well, no, during my teachings, I ran to a lot of great teachers, and a lot of good teachers have different sayings. Like this one teacher told me that, if you want to get a kid's attention, you have 30 seconds. You have 30 seconds to get into that kid's mind. After that 30-second window, you're going to have a hard time bringing them in. But I have 30 seconds to get them stimulated, fun, you know, discipline, you know, all those things, you know. And
but that's a gift. I can tell you, when we were teenagers together and we were rehearsing in the little theater, Joey was all of 16 or 17 years old, and all of the 3, 4, 5 year olds, he kept them entertained for hours on end. He just has that gift to think like a child, not childish, but he can make anything into a childlike game.
Right.
529-3508. We're talking with Joey Rogers and Celeste Lupu from Dancing in the Streets, Arizona. They're located at 88 West 38th Street, Suite 200. Now, if I'm correct, I believe that this past Saturday was the last Saturday of this semester.
Correct.
So you'll have a week break, and if people are interested in signing up, tell them how they can do that.
Well, we have a website, www.ditsaz.org, and the new schedule is available. Generally, what we recommend is to find your age group, come in and try a class for free, and then you can sign up after that. Our new session starts Monday, March 7th. We will be there from 4 till 8:30 at night. Just stop by and check it out and give it a try.
And you also, there have been times where, you know, I like this idea where, you know, you might miss a weekend class, you know, and then basically you often say, you know, parents will come up to you and say, well, can we make it up? You know, can we make it up during the week? You know,
right.
And it's really the parents saying, you know, I'm exhausted, but they're like, well, my kid might be kind of tired,
right?
But you guys often say it's the parents that are exhausted. The kids never really have a problem.
Oh, no.
True.
Yeah. So I mean, there's flexibility. Mm-hmm. There's a camaraderie down there. I've met some tremendous people.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, people that are very civically involved or want to become very, very involved.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think you guys need at this point in order to take that next step to become a leader in the community? Because when I bring my guests on, I also call upon them to become civically involved. And you guys are, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But really, the pot is simmering. The bubbles are there.
Right.
You know, you're almost ready to put the pasta in. What do you need for the pasta pot?
Well, I don't consider myself as a leader. I just consider as myself, I'm doing an art that I love, and I'm very passionate about children. And I'm just doing something that I really love. That's all I'm doing. And Dancing in the Streets, we want to be a world-class ballet school organization. So, you know, we're working with our board feverishly trying to do some planning. We're like right now this year, we're focusing more on fundraising now, you know, to keep our doors open, because that's our main goal right now, is keeping our doors open so we can give any kid in Tucson an opportunity to do ballet, you know, and as well, we do performances as well. So
yeah. Go ahead. Many of our kids really, you know, we end up buying shoes for them. We buy leotards, we buy tights. There's so much that goes into that no other studio does. And we don't have grants. We don't have a big, you know, sugar.
Even though we're a 501(c), but,
yeah,
you know.
There really isn't a sustainable financial picture for us. So we really need people to step up and believe in us and say, we want to write a check for you and help you continue to operate. We have the same expenses as any other business. We've got about 130 to 150 kids. But many of those kids, you know, their families start out paying to us, and then mom or dad loses their job.
We got hit with foreclosure with these kids.
We really never wanted to say money should be an issue why a child can't have an opportunity.
Well, it shouldn't be an issue.
Right, it shouldn't.
I believe we have a phone caller on the line as well, so take it away.
Sure. Hey, this question is for Joey Rogers. I thought it was interesting when you talked about how learning ballet helps you with hip-hop dance. I was wondering if you could describe more specifically how that works. Is it sort of a rhythmic understanding, or some sort of like flexibility that ballet dance gives you? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Oh, sure. Basically, it's ballet is more discipline on the discipline. It's more refined, you know, first positions with the feet and everything. And when you got hip hop, it's more looser. You can just let loose. But the ballet, it has to be really...
The whole point of learning ballet is really getting to understand your muscles, your bones, how they work together, alignment, body alignment, why does your foot point, learning where the muscles are. Once you've identified and really gotten comfortable, you hear this word core strength. Once you have your foundation of your body alignment and how your body rotates with turnout or not turnout, adapting to any other style of dance is much easier than if you came from where hip hop, where people are just sort of, they're moving with music, but there's not really a discipline to it. There isn't an order or a structure. And they don't necessarily understand, why does my foot go up? How do I, what are the mechanics, the body mechanics that makes my foot or my hip or my leg or jump higher? All of those things are really an integral part of ballet. And once you know ballet, you really can learn any other dance quicker than if you started from hip hop or some other form and tried to go backwards. It doesn't mean that you can't be a hip hop dancer first and learn ballet. It's just, it's a little bit more difficult to retrain your brain.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to, Celeste, just talk briefly in our final moments here. You also offer a couple of other different types of dance at the studio?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, yeah. We're really trying to target all generations, and we really want to see adults and seniors coming in. So we've got Tai Chi, Qigong, which focuses on meditation and healing and movement. We also have belly dancing on Thursday night for adults. We also have adult ballet, and we really want to encourage adults, families, grandparents to come in and try these different forms of movement for health and wellness.
Right.
Well, I just wanted to say, we were talking to Joey Rogers and Celeste Lupu from Dancing in the Streets again. They have a benefit for dance. There's going to be a benefit for Dancing in the Streets at St. Augustine Cathedral on March 5th of this year, which is very soon.
Next week.
Yeah, next Saturday.
It's from 4 to 8 p.m., located at 192 South Stone Avenue. There's going to be meatballs and salad. I was looking through the menu before, my mouth was just watering. But I wanted to say to both of you before I go that... you guys have meant a lot to my family and to my daughter and to my wife. You provide us structure, and you provide us an outlet for our daughter to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unique. And I just hope that in the long run that you guys will become partners for the Jake Feinberg Show as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Because as an artist as well, you kind of get to that point where you're in this mode where you're doing it.
Right.
Like, I'm doing this right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You have no idea where you're going to wind up, and you don't care because you're just doing it.
We're just driving. Right. We're just driving the car with no
real destination. So,
yeah.
I hope we can do this again in the near future.
Oh, absolutely.
We are thrilled to be here, and we're delighted for this opportunity for you and us both.
And I'm sure I'll be seeing your daughter again this Saturday.
She will absolutely be there. So again, don't miss the fundraiser, and check them out online. You can visit them at www.ditsaz.org. Their phone number is 520-867-8489. Again, guys, thanks so much for being part of the Jake Feinberg Show. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
And that's going to do it for week number 8 of the Jake Feinberg Show. It was a great one. I appreciate all the listenership, and we'll be back next week, same time. Tune in, and remember, advocate for yourselves. Otherwise, there won't be much left. It's up to you. Take care.
Tucson's Jolt.
Our job is to question authority.
KJLL.
Right now. It's beginning now.
South Tucson.